This is KPOO San Francisco. Bye bye bye. Shuba shuba. Shuba shuba. Shuba shuba.
Let me in. Shuba shuba. I want to be closer to you. Shuba shuba. Open up your soul. Shuba shuba. Let me find. The part that nobody ever knew.
Let me touch your
love. Oh, why don't you let me in? Let me be the first to ever touch your mind.
Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. There are quite a few shows in town to be enjoyed, and I'm very lucky that I get to speak to people who not only perform in the shows, but also make these shows a reality. One of those people is here to talk about a show right now. I'd like to welcome Artistic Director Carola Zertuche. Welcome.
Hello, thank you so much. Thank you for having me in the show.
Thank you for being on the show. So you've got, first of all, tell us a little bit about what you do.
I'm a flamenco dancer, and I'm artistic director of Teatro Flamenco of San Francisco, mm-hmm. and also I'm a teacher. I teach flamenco classes.
Very yes. cool. So when did you fall in love with flamenco?
Oh, since when I was probably like 7 years old, I start to dance. But actually, when I feel in love with flamenco, when I hear a CD about the cante, the singing, mm-hmm. and that's how I became like in love through the singing. And probably I was like maybe like 12 years old, 13, something like that.
And so you've been dancing flamenco this entire time since you were 13?
Yes.
Wow.
See, I start what I say. When I was like 7 years old, you know, when you are a child, my mother, she took me to classic, but it was more classic Spanish. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I hear this music, the singing, and I was, oh my God, I was like, what is this music? No, it was different than the other one, more folklorical, like sevillanas, fandangos, uh-huh. more with castanets, no? Uh-huh. And then when I hear the record, it was more like deep. And then I saw it in a program in the TV. Mm-hmm. I saw it like an advertising for Cumbre Flamenca, I'm sorry, the name of the performer. And it actually was the same music from the CD. And that's how I realized, oh my God, this is flamenco.
Wow.
And then since then, that's it. I was living in Guadalajara in Mexico. I'm from Mexico. Mm-hmm. From Torreón, but then I grew up in Guadalajara, and then later I moved to Mexico City because it was more kind of more professional, no? Mm-hmm. I was so lucky to study with Manolo Vargas. I always say he's my main teacher, no? Because I learned a lot, and he was very good teacher and artist also.
So have you?
And then I moved to Spain, and uh-huh. then here, and I'm still, no, study and. Always.
So when did you start dancing flamenco professionally?
Professionally, I was lucky because I started, I was 18, right when I moved to Mexico City, when okay. I finished high school. Mm-hmm. I moved to Mexico City and like right away I took a workshop, and it was with Cristobal Reyes. He's a very well-known flamenco dancer. Mm-hmm. And then he saw me there, and he asked me, like, where are you from, and why you are not dancing in the tablado? No, tablado is like a cabaret style. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, because I don't know nobody. I just moved here. And then he told me, okay, no, you have to dance. Come Wednesday to the tablado, and then let's talk with the owner. And then I went there on Wednesday, and I was dancing on Saturday.
Wow. So you were talented.
That's how my career started. And I was, what I say, very, very lucky, because on the tablado is where I really learned. No? I was like learning on the stage, uh-huh. basically. No, I started learning on the stage because I was sharing the stage with very good artists. And that's how I learned it. And then after I was working for like almost a year or a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, all my, the other dancers, they were like, no, you have to come to Spain. And then I moved to Spain and that's it. I worked there a little bit and studied for like 2 years. And then here, that's it. Like all been traveling and dancing all over.
Wow.
To like here in San Francisco, no?
So you teach here in San Francisco. Where is your class held?
Yes, I have a studio on the Mission in South Van Ness, mm-hmm. and it's that's Teatro Flamenco Studio, and here is where we teach all the classes and workshop. We have a lot of before the COVID, no, we used to have a lot of guest artists, and we do shows here also, like a small is. We turn the studio, like what I say, tablado, is more like a cabaret. It's more for like maybe like 60 people, 80. Mm-hmm. And we also do that once a month, every 2 months.
Okay.
Do that. And then we do the classes here. We teach, it's almost, I teach what, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday here.
Okay. And now you have a show coming up.
And then I have a show that we always do before the COVID, no? We used to do our home season every year, like once a year. Mm-hmm. Then this is my, since the COVID, it's been like 3 years that we haven't had the home season. And finally, no, it's here, and I'm really, really excited about this show, no? Because since 3 years ago, I haven't done a big production.
Oh, so this is the first big production since the lockdown.
The COVID, yes.
So everyone must be excited.
Last production was there at the Cowell in 2020. Uh-huh. It was, I remember, February of the 2020, right before COVID.
Wow. So everyone's got to be really excited, right?
Yes. Plus this production, I get inspired. Because I did a trip when it was the COVID, still the COVID, no?
Yes.
I did a trip to Jordan, to the Wadi Rum. I visited the Wadi Rum desert, uh-huh. and I was mesmerized, no, from the desert. And I don't know, I was like, it was magic for me. And I think something changed on me after I visited the desert, because uh-huh. it was, like, no, the energy, the stars, they were so beautiful. And I don't know, it was a force that I always say when I dance flamenco, this is like you go to another world, no? And that's what the kind of the title of the show is, Pasar to a Timeless World, no? In Spanish, Transitar por un mundo sin tiempo, no?
Mm-hmm.
Like what happened when the time stopped, no?
Yes, I...
Then that's how I get inspired, and then, I don't know, I think it's going to be a really good production. I'm really excited about this production.
So you say you went to the desert, and I know that when you're out in the desert, there's not a whole lot of city lights, so you can see a lot more stars. And do you think being away from the city and being, like, because when I'm in the desert, I really feel like I'm standing on a planet. Like you feel you feel like you're in space in a way that you never feel in the city.
Yes.
Is that how you felt when you were out in the desert?
Yeah, I felt like you are in another planet. No, it was so like you are in another world.
Yes, yes,
almost, no, like another world that the same. No, like anything can happen, but in a good way. No.
Yes. Yes. Like, mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about the show, which is called Transitar por un Mundo sin Tiempo. What can we expect to see when we go to this show?
Actually, that's what is going to happen. You are gonna feel all different emotions, mm-hmm. like from mystery, from happiness, from like powerful, and then, I don't know, it's going to be a mix. And I have this year, I invite an electronic musician that also he's my nephew, Pascual Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
Will be the, like, my first time working with him. And then we have electric guitar and trumpet. This year I incorporate these three new instruments in the production. No?
Okay.
And also, of course, we will have the flamenco guitar, a great guitar player, Juani de la Isla. He's from Cádiz, Spain,
mm-hmm.
that he's the musical director. And then also I have Diego Amador Jr., that also is, he's an amazing musician, but he's a singer.
Okay.
And he's going to be with us. He's from Sevilla, Spain. And our guest dancer is from Malaga, Spain, Adrián Santana. That also he's incredible. He's well trained in all classic, modern, and flamenco, no? And I have two dancers from mm-hmm. here, from San Francisco. Well, actually, one is from Santa Barbara,
okay.
Isabella and Marina, that she's an incredible dancer from San Francisco, but now she's working all over the world with Noche Flamenca, but also she started with Teatro Flamenco when she was like 15 years old.
Oh, wow.
She started with the company.
So how
that will be the cast.
Excellent.
We are creating... The opening number is going to be really nice. I don't want to like say much, but it's like, for me, will be one of the good start. Like the opening number, I'm really, really excited. And the choreography and everything, the music is really nice.
So for our listening audience, where is it and at what time?
Yeah, it's the only, it will be just one show at the Hertz Theater
on
Saturday,
okay.
May 13th at 8 p.m. And then you can find the tickets at citybox.com or in our website, Theater Flamenco with TH, like the French, theaterflamenco.org.
Very nice, very nice. And if people want to find out more about how to take classes, how would they go about doing that?
Also in our website, with Teatro Flamenco of San Francisco, is teatroflamenco.org. You have all the information. And if anyone, because the guest artists, they will be teaching workshops. It will be a cante workshop, singing and percussion workshop on Wednesday and Thursday. And then Adrián, he will teach a flamenco workshop on Sunday and Monday.
Very nice.
Of this week, no? And everything, all the information is on the website.
Okay. And just one more time for our listening audience, when and what time for and what day for the show?
Yes, it's Saturday, May 13, 8 p.m. at the Hearst Theater in San Francisco. And it's one performance, the only show. That's why you don't have to miss it. And then all the information, you can find it in our website, teatroflamenco.org.
Wow.
If you search Teatro Flamenco of San Francisco, you will find it. And it will be incredible. You will see the show will have a little bit of everything. Like you will see a flamenco, very traditional,
mm-hmm.
of singing and dancing, and regular flamenco, like traditional style, and other will be more avant-garde, like more with some more modern movements. And also the music, no? The music will have a little mix, but with always flamenco.
All right. Well, Carola Zertuche, I'd like to thank you so much for being on the show today. And I just know that the audience is going to be transfixed by it.
Thank you so much for having me on Vietnam. Give me the opportunity to share this show with the audience.
All right. Okay, people of Earth, this is your opportunity. If you love dance, then you'll love this. I've seen some flamenco shows in the past, and oh my God, you want to get up there and do it yourself. It's just so amazing. So go check out Transitar por un Mundo sin Tiempo this Saturday, May 13th. And let's listen to a little tiny bit of Arpasón. This is Gypsy Flamenco, the live version.
That's Arpasón and Gypsy Flamenco. That's from the Teatro series, Volume 1. Yeah, today I'm traveling all over the world because we just got through talking with a person about flamenco. And now we're going to talk about Scottish fiddling. Here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome Alistair Fraser. Welcome.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be talking with you.
It's a pleasure to be talking to you. So you're in something called the San Francisco Scottish Fiddlers. Elaborate.
Yeah. You know, I love that I'm coming on after the flamenco, because there's a certain joie de vivre about flamenco that I think we share.
Mm-hmm.
We explore our traditional Scottish music. As you can tell from my accent, I am from Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically tour this beautiful planet with my fiddle, instigating and asking questions and celebrating. I love the traditional music of Scotland and the variety of it. A lot of it's dance music.
Mm-hmm.
It's about people expressing themselves, you know, as we do in native traditional music, dance forms, raspés, reels, jigs. But also we love to express the soul of the people. And I find that I've been doing this for many years, and as I travel, there's a certain universal component, you know, when you celebrate your own culture. I think it translates, you know, it translates to other people, and you get to share the conversation and have that exchange. So we're going to have some concerts coming up in the Bay Area, and we just invite people to come out and celebrate spring and you know, get a fiddle and a jig in your head and in your soul.
So before we get into what the concerts are, have you guys like throughout the pandemic, people weren't able to go out, but now it's sort of loosening up. So tell me a little bit about trying to be a musician during the pandemic times.
It was a time for some deep thinking. I mean, for everyone, musicians included, but you know, it was also a time to kind of, I suppose, if you were lucky enough, you could recharge the banks, you know, and think about, I mean, the creative banks.
Uh-huh.
and think about, as Natalie and I did, my touring partner, you know, we think about writing new music. What are we going to say? And we're now touring. I was touring in Maine and New England last night. And audiences are coming back out. They really are.
Mm-hmm.
But for a long time, you know, we were confined to barracks, so to speak. And it was a time for reflection, but we try to turn that into some kind of creative energy, you know. And man, you know what I feel now is just how much I needed music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
During that whole time, I needed music, I needed community, I needed you know, just friends, family. That as we gathered, as we huddled, taking care of each other. But now it feels like it's time to come out and, you know, celebrate what it is to be alive and to be with other people and to have some dance energy and sing together. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to do that with my fiddle music. It's a great privilege.
So when did you first pick up the fiddle?
When I was 8 years old, unsuspectingly, who would have thought? You know? There, a quiet, shy little me.
Mm-hmm.
But there was an old fiddle or violin under the sideboard, as we say in Scotland, in the living room that belonged to my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents thought, well, wouldn't it be good if someone played that? You know, it's not doing anyone any good lying under this piece of furniture.
Mm-hmm.
So I was lucky enough in Scotland at that time to have a violin teacher who was coming to my primary school and who was looking for students. So three students were, you know, selected, and I was so lucky to have that. And little did I think then it would kind of change my life or give my life so much direction. But I did love it.
Uh-huh.
I love the violin. I love the whole classical repertoire, and I love the fiddle music, the indigenous music of my culture. And But I was lucky to meet my violin teacher at 8 years old, who I then worked with until I left high school at 18 and went to university and kept playing then, you know, in the orchestra and playing Scottish music.
So were your parents yeah. surprised that you were the one to pick up the fiddle?
Well, they were happy. They were glad. I mean, there was definitely music in my household. My dad was a piper. He was a bagpipe player.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mother grew up in a family of where it was not unusual for the family to gather around the piano and sing some songs. Or her brother played the saxophone.
Okay.
You know, they loved big band music, the music of their era. So it was definitely a household that I grew up on that valued music.
Okay.
You know, just as something to have in your life. And so I think the more I look back on it, the more it kind of made sense.
Right. So they were more thrilled.
Members also, yeah, they were thrilled. Yeah, and you know, they really got behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it took me to all the rehearsals and all the fiddle competitions, and I got to know all the other players. And so it kind of became a way of life.
Got it. Fast forward, you're now a professional fiddle player. Now, I've always thought, like, because, you know, there's the violin and there's the fiddle, and it's like you call it the fiddle when it's for everybody, but it's the violin when it's, like, more high tone. Is that kind of the separation, or is there an actual difference between the violin and the fiddle?
No, there's no difference. It's just a kind of a pet name, really. Or actually, it goes back into the origins. If you go back to the centuries, there are older names for the violin, which in different languages sound and look more like fiddle.
Okay.
So they're sort of interchangeable. But these days, we tend to use fiddle for if there's a degree of improvisation, you know, like jazz.
Okay.
People might talk more about their fiddle. Stefan Grappelli loved to talk about his fiddle and his violin,
mm-hmm.
and so did Yehudi Menuhin, you know, these are my heroes. And so it's definitely interchangeable, and I love that about it. And if you go back to the old days in Scotland in the 18th century, the typical, you know, professional violinist would play a recital or play with the orchestra one night, maybe play Vivaldi or Corelli, or mm-hmm. do a recital of sonatas, you know, with the harpsichord, mm-hmm. and the next night they'd be playing for a dance.
Mm.
And so that idea of the fiddle and the violin kind of coexisting goes way back.
Got it. Now tell me a little bit about San Francisco Scottish Fiddlers. How did that all come about?
Well, it's one of the most beautiful things, I think, in my life. When I came from Scotland to
mm-hmm.
the Bay Area
mm-hmm.
Back in the 80s,
ooh.
You know, music was a huge thing for me, and I was playing my fiddle. I was learning American styles. I was learning old-time fiddle music and bluegrass and, you know, being a good traveler, a musical traveler. But also, you know, I was full of my own music, and I increasingly met people in this country who would say, oh, wow, how does that work? You know, let's hear your music. Let's hear the Scottish music. And I was so blown away by the interest. And this, I'm talking the San Francisco Bay Area here.
Mm-hmm.
The interest in my music, in Scottish music, and it wasn't even a superficial interest. It was a kind of a, can we go deep into this? How does it work? You know, how do dances work? How do you do these different styles of different techniques? So I thought there's definitely an interest in it here. So we formed a group called the San Francisco Fiddlers.
Uh-huh.
And we met in my house in Sausalito for the first meeting.
Okay.
In 1984. And ever since then, we have been just celebrating, asking questions, playing the tunes, playing for each other, and kind of looking out for each other. It became more than just about music, which is one of the great things about music. You know, it created community. And that was the reason for us gathering, was to play tunes together and to play for dances. And so here we are, I don't know how many years later. We're still, some of the original members are still there. We've had many, many, many years of kids of all ages joining us, adults too, and just getting into the spirit of it, and so it goes on. You know, there's a great kind of continuation of that spirit going that originated back in 1984.
So for the people who want to take part in that spirit, tell us a little bit about the show that you got coming up.
Well, as you can probably tell by the way I'm talking about it's the great thing about this music is it is music of the people. It's the music of a culture, you know, that was designed there for us to express ourselves as we go through life, and as does all traditional music. And so we invite people to join us. It's not a formal affair. It's like we invite you to come and join in the ceilidh.
And enjoy.
Now, imagine if it was your own living room and some of your favorite people were there and you got some musicians who are going to play, and maybe you're going to lift a rug and do a dance in the kitchen, and then you're going to sing some songs. It's that, only it's, I don't know, like 80 people on stage, and it makes a wonderful big sound. And when we feature various soloists...
How many people are on stage?
I haven't counted recently, but I think it's somewhere around 80.
Okay.
So it's an orchestra.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I should say that right up front.
I was like, oh, fiddle.
Okay. We got bagpipes, we got fiddles, we got cellos, piano. What did I miss out? There'll be some spontaneous dancing. We'll probably try and get the audience to sing. So it's basically a fiddle orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the old days, they would have called it a folk orchestra.
Okay.
Various countries. But the essence of it is it's inclusivity. It's community. But also, you know, there are moments of artistic beauty as we go into these beautiful airs and laments and wonderful dance tunes that we love so much.
Very nice. So it's the San Francisco Scottish Fiddlers, and it's you're going to be in Berkeley and Palo Alto and Carmel. So tell our listening audience about, you know, the different venues and when you're going to be playing there.
Yeah, we're going to be playing one of my main home venues as I travel is the incredible Freight and Salvage in Berkeley.
Talking
about, you know, the living, every town needs a living room where people can go to and kind of share music together, and that the Freight and Salvage is definitely up there. And so Freight and Salvage in Berkeley on Friday, May 19th, and then we go head down to Palo Alto to a beautiful theater at the Spangenberg Theater.
Where's that?
The Spangenberg. And that's it's part of the high school. It's a beautiful venue.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at the thing. It's a 780 Arastradero Road.
Okay, yeah. What I love about that is it's a beautiful venue with great acoustics and very welcoming embrace there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Going to be magic. And then the next day is the high school in Carmel.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have some bagpipers to welcome you there. And it's a matinee performance, which has its own certain energy. And that will be on Sunday, May 21st. And then after that, we'll all be exhausted. we'll celebrate it so much. And so, you know, we just want people to come out and kind of get into a post-COVID mindset, dare I say.
Where
people gather and do what we do best.
So to reiterate, on Friday, May 19th, you'll be at Freight and Salvage in Berkeley, which is at 2020 Addison. On Saturday, May 20th, you'll be at the Spangenberg Theater in Palo Alto. And then on Sunday, May 21st, you'll be doing a matinee performance at the Carmel Center for the Performing Arts at Carmel High School. So if
all that information, Marilyn, is at sffiddles.org. Information than I can remember.
I was just about to ask. sffiddles.org. And people can find out about all of this and any upcoming shows and all of that?
Yes, everything. The whole yeah, the life of the fiddler there is all encapsulated. And you get a sense, I think, also of the spirit of the organization and what we're about. And, you know, we invite people to join also and come and play the rest of the year and join the club.
And for people who have kids who might be like you, someone who would take to the fiddle right away, what do you recommend for them?
Oh, come and be part of it. You know, pick up on the sort of infectious energy. We have lots of kids over the years who've joined us and have come to the various fiddle camps that we have. We have week-long residencies in the Redwoods and one up in the Sierra Nevada. And the great thing about that is for kids especially, they get to hang out with their peer group. You know, you find that there are other teens and younger and older who share this joy, and it becomes a major part of their life. So we've had many, many waves of kids coming along and growing up in this tradition and then going on. And that, in fact, many of them are now professional players and teachers. So it's definitely a thing that is attractive to all ages.
Well, I love hearing that. I just had an 18-year-old on earlier today who has been playing since he was 12, and I've had the flamenco people, and now I have the Scottish fiddlers, and the theme that runs throughout is that they were just kids when they picked up this old thing and made it new again and shiny and beautiful. So I really appreciate the fact that you're introducing the music to a whole new generation.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that, and I appreciate you giving us some time, and it's lovely to get to talk to you about it.
Well, thank you. With that, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
My pleasure, and I hope we get to meet sometime.
That would be lovely in this post-pandemic world. Alistair Fraser.
Right, here's to that.
Here's to you, Alistair Fraser. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Marla.
All right, people of Earth, this is your opportunity. Check out the San Francisco Scottish Fiddlers. Maybe we could hear a little bit. This is a allegedly a gloomy winter's nuawa.
us, adore the palace, say Virion, prune the sylvan fairness, feathery breathing springs the brooks, and beneath the brain the burning jukes, and if the thing is cheerio. Trees may bud and birds may sing, flowers may bloom and verdure spring, but joy can me they can a bring. At last bid you, my dearie, home.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO, San Francisco. That's from 3 years ago. It's a gloomy winter's noir from, I can't possibly say it properly, but maybe one day I will be able to, because I'll have someone who actually knows how to pronounce things properly explain it to me. But it's from the San Francisco Scottish Fiddlers. And like I said, I am all over the globe today. We've had flamenco, we've got the Scottish Fiddlers, and now we got CamFest. And here to talk about it, I'd like to welcome Associate Programmer Jess Jew. Hello.
Hi, Marilyn. Thank you so much for having us on.
Thank you for being on. So for our listening audience who may not know what the acronym is for, please let them know.
Well, yeah, so CAM, C-A-A-M, there's a secret second A, mm-hmm. stands for the Center of Asian American Media, mm-hmm. and CamFest is our annual film festival that has been going on for over 40-plus years. It used to go under a different name, but we have been CamFest for a few years now, and mm-hmm. we are trying to show the best, newest, and brightest talent from both the Asian American and Asian diaspora communities.
Okay. And for the listeners out there who maybe don't know what diaspora means.
Diaspora means you were at home and for some reason you went somewhere else. Mm-hmm. It could be for good reasons, bad reasons, but so much of, you know, our Asian American community experience does stem from that. So, mm-hmm. you know, Asian folks in the States, in Canada, overseas in Europe, just a wide variety that we all have different experiences, but we're still tied by our roots.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about the mission of the Center for Asian American Media.
Yeah, again, we've been doing this for over 40 years, mm-hmm. and we are trying to really highlight and celebrate the work of Asian American filmmakers. And in the last few years, we've also gone on to expand into food programming mm. and ideas and music, anything related to do with the arts and creation of culture, mm-hmm. and to really anything that shows the richness and diversity of the Asian American experience to a broadcast audience. And we do this by funding, producing, distributing, and exhibiting work, which, you know, in large part, we do with this festival that is happening this month.
I love the fact that you have food programming because as a child, basically, if I liked the food of a culture, then I wanted to be that culture. So it started out with like, oh, I love Italian food. I want to be Italian. I love Mexican food. I want to be Mexican. And you know, so what kinds of foods can we find out about in this food programming?
Oh my God, that experience is, I don't think is unique. I think food is just such a fun and celebratory and such an accessible way to learn about a culture. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that, you know, opens doors to learning more. Mm-hmm. But we have a really, really amazing food program, and props to our festival director for kind of curating this. Mm-hmm. So we have a Jamaican-Iranian mashup at mm-hmm. Calabash, which is a restaurant by Nigel Jones, formerly of Kingston 11.
Uh-huh.
So we're going to get a mashup of his dishes, some of the favorites from Kingston 11, as well as some Persian and Northern Iranian dishes from Hanif Sadir of Kamaj. So we're really excited about that. And what's so cool is these food cultures already inherently are such a fusion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think Jamaican cuisine is so much an authentic mix of indigenous Caribbean and West African and even South Asian influences. So really exciting to see what they come up with.
Okay.
And we are also having a short film program specifically about food called All You Can Eat.
Mm-hmm.
And just exploring, you know, food can be such a nurturing tool, but can also, you know, sometimes be a little source of shame for some folks. So exploring the wide spectrum of what that can mean to folks.
I've seen, you know, like comedy stand-ups where they talk about, specifically Asian Americans talk about showing up at school with the sort of traditional lunches and feeling kind of ashamed because they just wanted like the crappy lunches that everybody else had. And is that something that is addressed in the movie?
You know, I think we're even beyond that. We're talking more even deeper about what happens when, you know, food... Because that totally happens. But even within our own families, you know, food, you know, you tell your mom, like, I'm not hungry, I don't want to eat. And she won't take that for an answer,
right?
Grandma will keep feeding you. But then the next time you see grandma, she's like, wow, you've gotten fat. It's like a dichotomy.
You can't win, yeah.
Yeah, you can't win. And, like, you're not going to say no to grandma or auntie when she mm-hmm. puts that, like, third, fourth serving on your plate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, parties and family gatherings, even funerals are so centered mm-hmm. on food. So it's just like a really interesting angle as to see all the ways it affects our lives and our families and our relationships. So, you know, you can get deep into thought about that with some of our films and then go mm-hmm. eat a delicious dinner
mm-hmm.
At Calabash afterwards and kind of feel the full spectrum of humanity.
All right. So I know I kind of derailed you with because anytime I hear food, I'm like, wait, what food? So let's go back to the films that you are going to be showing for our listening audience.
Yeah, so we have over 55 programs over 10 days. It's going to be chock-packed. You're going to have an embarrassment of riches.
Okay.
But I think one of the more interesting films coming up is our centerpiece documentary called Liquor Store Dreams by So-Yun
mm-hmm.
And it's really cool. So was a CAM fellow in 2021. She's been working on this film. It premiered at Tribeca. So this is really somewhat of a homecoming for her and this piece. And this documentary is a really intimate portrait of two Korean-American children of liquor store owners. And specifically, they run liquor stores in the Black and Brown communities of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So this second generation is setting out to bridge the generational divide with the immigrant parents. You know, obviously very grateful for the sacrifices that gave them this life from their parents. But what does it mean when, you know, we talk about, you know, BLM, the BLM movement and anti-blackness in our communities? And how do you bridge that with your parents' generation? And so is the filmmaker as well as the subject with her father. And she also follows her friend Danny, who leaves a very lucrative job at Nike to return mm-hmm. to Skid Row to help his mother, you know, run the family store after his dad passes away. So just a lot of, you know, themes about two communities trying to find commonality against, you know, a pretty historical tension
mm-hmm.
About two immigrant kids trying to figure out their own way while honoring their parents. And I mean, I would bring some tissues for this one in the best way possible.
Okay. And keep going. We've got plenty of time.
God, I love this. I love this. You're so generous. And we also have a really interesting, another documentary by Karen Cho
mm-hmm.
called Big Fight in Little Chinatown. So this is really shining a light on the displacement and resistance that characterized Chinatowns all across North America. And I think in the last few years, we've seen a lot of, you know, more very explicit violence against mm-hmm. Asian and Asian American folks. But it's part of a deeper conversation about who belongs and who can afford to live and occupy these spaces.
Right.
So Karen does a really great job interviewing business owners, community groups, academics, and the residents themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is such a bigger issue that is not just affecting Chinatown, but communities of color all throughout the country. And we're going to have a really great discussion with some folks who have been you know, fighting this big fight, mm-hmm. and really talking what's happening now and what we can maybe do to help push against it.
So when we talk about the Center for Asian American Media, what is the Asian American is such a broad umbrella. So who does that embrace?
Ooh, Marilyn, how much time do you have? we will embrace anyone and any folks who want to come. This is really for everyone. And, of course, we're trying to highlight a community that may not get the most opportunity. Mm-hmm. But, again, we're like all good fights. We don't get there alone. So CanFest really is for everyone. And we're really trying to make that more accessible by also providing free programming. So, you know, especially now, things are pretty expensive. And I think if you want to bring a family of four out, it can add up really quickly.
Yep.
So I would definitely encourage everyone to check out our free programs at the San Francisco Public Library on Saturday, May 13th.
Oh, nice.
We're having, really centrally located. Uh-huh. You can BART there, bring the whole family. We have a documentary program called Community Care, mm-hmm. which is pairing two really important documentaries about COVID. And I know we will want, you know, some of us may want to, you know, move on maybe at this point, but we are still very much dealing with that. So we have Angel Dose, which is a documentary that follows Tariq, a Muslim American nurse, mm-hmm. that right after his shift during the COVID pandemic is racing to deliver expiring vaccines across the country, across Philadelphia, mm-hmm, some mm-hmm. of the most vulnerable folks in the city, as well as Capua, Texas by PJ Raval, which features three young Filipino women who are dealing with the ramifications of the COVID-19 pandemic and racial tensions. And then after that, we have Unconditional by Richard Louis, who is a veteran broadcast journalist who actually is now filmmaker, who actually had to take a step back to be a caretaker for his family. So this is a documentary filmed over 7 years, and it follows three families, including Richard's own, and their journey with physical and mental health that comes from caregiving, you know, something that affects over 50 million families each year. So again, these are totally free. Just come show up at the San Francisco Public Library. And we also have, in addition to some free film screening, some free panels, and that includes one with Amazon at the with Audible Theater, which mm-hmm. is a really cool initiative that Audible's doing, where they're recording live theater and making it essentially a radio broadcast or a podcast.
Mm, okay.
So that's really opening a, you know, an avenue to consume theater in a way that is much more accessible.
So if people want to find out more about the full range of programs, where can they go?
They can go to camfest.com, and that's CAAMFEST.com. And we'll have all the information, all of the venues, and way more details, anything your heart can desire.
And is there a printed schedule that can be found at the library?
I believe so. We have some quick guides, but
excellent.
We also are trying to, you know, stay environmentally friendly. So definitely check us out online. Follow us on Instagram at CAM, CAAM, and we are happy to, you'll get all the updates there.
All right. Well, Jess Ju, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. I could talk to you much longer, but we are out of time. So, but I will be having you back.
Thank you so much, Marilyn, and happy Monday.
Happy Monday to you. Okay, people of Earth, around the world, CanFest, Scottish fiddling, flamenco, Azure Balski, it's all great and fabulous. It's time for me to turn the mic over to Mr. Ford. It'll be pleasuring your ear hole. Want to remind you that the Bird and Beckett's going to be having Mr. Lonely, so I'm going to leave you with some Mr. Lonely. This is the one and only Johnny Lonely.
Nobody's glad to see you. Nobody wonders where you've been. And at the hotel, Lonely Arms, nobody checks you in. Nobody's there to greet you.
A few years back, I had interviewed a young man who had won a music competition, a Battle of the Bands, and he was just so delightful, like as they all are, and he was on the show. And now he's performing music, and I expect one day that I will hear that he is in Carnegie Hall. So I'd like to welcome Asher Belsky. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
I'm doing great.
So, like, how long ago was it? Because in my mind, it was just like a couple of years ago. But, you know, COVID, the pandemic threw off everything. So when did you win that Battle of the Bands?
You might be confusing me with somebody else, because I don't remember winning a Battle of the Bands, actually. But
oh.
I think I came into the studio and played a little acoustic set maybe 2 years ago during the pandemic.
Oh, okay. But I remember you because you were young and you were adorable, and now you're out there really playing music, like you're a professional musician. So can you tell our listening audience a little bit about how you got started playing music?
Yeah, so I've played guitar since I was about 6 years old. I'm 18 now.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad is a huge music lover. He'd always be playing music around the house in the car, and I really gravitated towards the sound of the guitar. I love the Beatles. I really love George Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
So I started taking lessons, and the first song I think I learned how to play was Here Comes the Sun, and I've been hooked ever since. And, you know, now I play my own shows. I have my own band. I write my own music, and I love it. It's my favorite thing to do.
Now, how long have you been playing professionally?
Professionally, I've been playing since I was probably around 12 or 13.
So now that you're 18, like, so I'm assuming that when you're 12 or 13 and you're going around with your parents in tow, now that you're grown up, do you get to go on your own?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a senior in high school right now, so I live with my mom and dad, and they're super supportive. But
uh-huh. Yeah,
I mean, I'm going off to college in the fall. So I'm going to, you know, start a new chapter in my life.
What are you going to study in college?
I'm going to be studying music. I'm going down to study in L.A.
Excellent,
so
really excellent, excited. Excellent. So you are going to be playing at the Golden Gate, the banjo. Tell our listeners about where you're going to be.
Yeah, so I'm going to be playing in Golden Gate Park at the banjo, which is right by the DeYoung Museum.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be playing two sets from 4:30 to 5:30 and 6 to 7. I'm going to be playing mostly my music, and it's a free show, so come out with the family. Come, it's hopefully going to be a really lovely day. We'll be playing music outside in this beautiful location. It's going to be a really good time.
Now, do you play solo, or do you have people up on the stage with you?
I play with a trio, so I sing and I play guitar, and my friend plays bass, and my friend plays drums. And
who are they?
Yeah. My friend Matt. He goes to the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. He's a junior there. He plays bass. He's incredible.
Uh-huh.
And he's studying there. And then my friend Porter plays drums, and he goes to the School of the Arts here in the city. And we've known each other forever, and he's amazing. And so the three of us are really good friends, and we play a lot together.
When did you guys decide that you wanted to perform together?
When Matt moved out here to go to college, he's from Chicago, and I had known him through social media and some stuff that we had done together through different music camps and stuff in the past. But he moved out here right during the pandemic, and so the three of us really hit it off. We started jamming and then decided that, you know, we should start performing out together.
Okay.
It was great.
Okay, and you're saying that that he writes music. And do you also write music?
I write music.
You write music. Okay, and
yes.
Where do you get your inspiration from?
Oh, everywhere. I'm always trying to listen to new music to inspire me. I mean, what I think is different from my perspective is I've kind of listened to music from two different point of views, like from me, the guitar player, and for me, the singer. So I'm listening lyrically, and I'm also listening, you know, structurally, to, you know, get inspiration from different song forms and different chord progressions and ideas for improvisation, but then also, you know, what I want to talk about and cool rhyming. And so I love listening to music, and that really inspires me to write.
Okay, so what is your favorite genre of music that you're deriving a lot of inspiration from that maybe you weren't listening to a few years ago?
I've been listening to everything, but I've been listening to a lot of R&B lately, which has been super inspirational. Artists, more contemporary artists like Frank Ocean, people like that.
Okay.
Great.
And then I just want to make sure for our listeners to just say once again, when and where and how did you get involved? How did you get on the lineup?
For the band show?
Yeah.
Yeah. So a friend of mine put me in contact with them, but it's going to be at the Golden Gate Park Band Show, which is right by the DeYoung Museum,
mm-hmm.
from 4:30 to 7. So we're playing two sets. So 4:30 to 5:30 and 6 to 7. And
on what day?
It's open to everybody on Friday, May 12th.
Okay.
This upcoming Friday.
And then after that, what are your plans? What are your plans for playing around?
This weekend, I'm playing up at the Mill Valley Music Festival.
Ooh.
So I'm going to be sitting in on Saturday. And then on Sunday, I'm playing a set on the Sweetwater stage, which is from 5:15 to 5:45.
Very cool. Very cool indeed. And then for aspiring musicians out there who are maybe a little bit timid about performing in front of anyone, or what advice do you give someone who maybe wants to be a musician but just, you know, is kind of shy about it?
I think, you know, people go out to see live music to have a good time. People aren't, you know, there's no points to be scored, or you can't lose. It's not, you know, it's not like a basketball game where you can lose. Everybody's just there to have fun. And so if you can realize that and just go out and have a good time and play the best that you can and smile and put on a good show, I think that's all people can ask for. And I think that's what makes for a really great performance.
Excellent, excellent. Now, if people wanted to hear more of your music online, how would they go about doing that?
I'm on Spotify, Apple Music, all of the platforms. It's just Asher Belsky. I have an EP out and some singles, and also come out to the shows. I'm going to be playing a bunch of live unreleased, or a bunch of new unreleased music live. So you can't hear that on the streaming platform.
All right. Well, Asher Belsky, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, and I look forward to seeing you at the band show.
Yes, it's going to be a great time.
All right. People of Earth, this is your opportunity. He was a charming youngin' when he was here. He's still charming, as you can hear. And now we're going to listen to a track that he did. I'm going to say he did this about a year ago live at the Sebastiani Theater. This is Ain't No Sunshine.
Sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too far. Anytime she goes away. I wonder this time where she's gone. I wonder if she's going to stay. ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, hey. I know. Oh, better leave the young thing alone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. All right, break it down. Give me some math. Jasminski on the bass, come on! I wonder this time where she's gone. And I wonder, is she gone to stay? Cause she always ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long anytime she goes away. She goes away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away.
The kids are tearing it up. That's Asher Belsky, Ain't No Sunshine. He performed that live at the Sebastiani Theater. It is 11:55 here at 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. It's almost time for me to touch your mind, but I'm feeling like some George Benson. So here it is on Broadway.